fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
This off. This is Part-Time Fanboy, and I'm Christian, and you are?
Paul Edwards right here.
Paul Edwards, and we are here. I don't know. I kind of wanted to maybe get together with some people or anyone and talk about, because Halloween is coming, like our favorite sort of creepy Halloween TV shows, you know?
Yeah.
Because this weekend, The Walking Dead is back. Tonight.
Yes.
Tonight.
I'm quite happy about that.
Yeah, no, me too. And did you ever catch up on season two? Because I remember when we had talked a while ago about the season two finale, you still had not even seen season two. So it was mostly me just like rambling on about it.
I did. I spent some time catching up on season two. And yeah. I'm happy that they're off the farm. And I'm looking forward to, you know, some new digs and some new bad guys. And I think it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of, there's part of me that's worried and part of me that's not, because it seems like Rick in the show has kind of actually found his sort of balls in a way.
Right.
And but the prison arc in the comic book is one that just, I don't know how much you read of the actual comic books, but it just went on and on and on forever and ever and ever. And at one point when I was reviewing the books during that sequence, I was just like, well, we should just call it The Talking Dead, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I kind of coined that phrase on Ain't It Cool before they even came up with the idea for that, you know, The Talking Dead for the show. It's like all they're doing is talking. There's not a lot like really happening, and it was driving me nuts. So I can easily see how the show could fall into the trap of the comic. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, I have a feeling that they'll probably compress it and speed things up, so, you know, but you know, we'll see. I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt after they manage to sort of, you know, pull last season out of the mud and get it going.
Yeah. My hopes are high for this one. I think that this will, I mean, they're introducing the governor, right? I'm not spoiling anything there.
Right.
So hopefully, if they're going to fit the governor into 13 episodes, the prison arc won't last for too long, because from what I remember of the comic, and it's been a while, the governor doesn't really show up or have any real big consequence up until the end of the prison arc, if I remember that correctly. And have you been reading the comics, or have you read the comics?
You know, it's been a while, and I haven't. I think I only read the first two collections. I've got the others sitting on my shelf. I just haven't managed to catch up with it.
Well, I don't want to spoil anything for you, and I'm not going to, but some really heavy stuff goes down at the end of the prison arc, from what I remember, and with the introduction of the governor. And I don't think that they're going to do that on do what they did in the comic on the TV show. I would be very impressed if they did, but we'll see. We'll see how they, you know, finagle their way out of, you know, following the same exact path as the comic, which we all know that they're not going to. But I wonder what fans' expectations are. You know, having known the way the comic has gone and seeing where that they're absolutely going to be in the prison and the governor is coming and what's going to happen to a couple of the big main characters, you know. So,
well, what was the first, I guess, horror TV show that you remember when you were a kid?
Well, the only thing, I mean, is The Twilight Zone. I mean, that's it. I mean, The Twilight Zone is the big daddy as far as I'm concerned. Is that pretty much what you remember?
I remember that, but my mom was a big fan of Dark Shadows. And so I watched that too when I was growing up, you know, and that's more of the sort of gothic-y soap opera than anything, you know, else. I wouldn't necessarily call it like horror. You know, as much as it's sort of, sort of drama with horrific elements in it. But I remember, Dark Shadows was a an afternoon soap that they reran in Hawaii. And, you know, Twilight Zone came on PBS, I think.
Really?
At the time, of all things. It was either PBS or the station next to PBS on my dial. And that usually came on Friday nights, I think.
Oh, Friday nights. So you said the Twilight Zone came on Friday nights?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I remember watching them at night, and I don't remember having to get up for school the next day. So it was a weekend thing, and so that was always a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, Dark Shadows kind of started off like, what, 60s, correct?
Right, right.
And I'd never really been exposed to that. I've heard so many people, and I did not see the Tim Burton remake, had no desire, but I think it's coming, it's like on demand right now, mm-hmm. and I believe it's coming out on DVD, if it's not out already. But I just never tried to, I could never find it, first of all, because it was a soap. I think I was too old, I mean, too young, and it might have already been off the air by the time I was old enough to even know that, but you and I are generally about the same age. You're a little older than me, right?
Yeah, I'm 2 years older than you are, but the other thing is that when I was growing up in Hawaii, we had about two or three independent stations that had some really awesome programmers, and one of the stations every day after school from, like, I don't know, 3 till 6 or whatever, they aired. It was like a horror movie festival, horror and sci-fi movie festival almost. And they started off with the Universal Monster Pictures continued it through with the Hammer Monster Pictures. They would throw in Japanese horror. They would throw in Italian horror. I remember.
Really? On TV?
Yeah, yeah. The movie that scared the crap out of me was Black Sunday.
The
Mario Bava movie. They showed all of these very unusual movies as sort of like a creature feature kind of thing, and it, like, every day it was a new awesome horror movie.
Wow, you were lucky.
I was really fortunate, and it was I didn't do a lot of homework probably because of that, but
that's so funny.
It was really it was really entertaining, and it was like an education in horror films, you know?
Yeah.
So when I had all those awesome movies, I didn't really pay so much attention to the TV shows. And I never really thought of Twilight Zone as like sort of a horror TV show.
It
had a
God,
few episodes that were scary. Like I know definitely, Nightmare at 20,000 Feet is the one that, like, always got me.
The Shatner one?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, really? Even with the fuzzy snowman sort of suit thing on the wing?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was scary because, going back and forth from Hawaii, you have to go on an airplane. We spent a lot of time on airplanes, and so that just freaked me out.
Yeah, I just... Dark Shadows, I just looked it up. It looks like it ran from 66 to 71. So I was definitely born after it was on TV, and that was the sort of thing that ran every day if it was a soap opera, correct?
Right, and it was definitely a rerun too, because my mom had seen it the first time around, and so she would sort of catch me up on what was going on and say, oh, look, this is, you're going to be excited about what's coming up because this is happening. So
that's so cool. Your mom's awesome.
it was pretty nice.
No, I mean, so I never got into Dark Shadows, and I actually, they have them on Netflix. You can watch them on Netflix, and I actually tried to watch the first episode, and I could not get through it. I was just like, holy cow, and who knows who's listening to this and if people are going to get freaked out and ticked off, but I just thought it was kind
They're
of
very
not
slow
good
by today's standards.
Yeah, but I mean, the one big thing that I remember, and you had said, like, you had not thought of the Twilight Zone so much as horror, but I remember that I would catch the Twilight Zone not so much in Jersey or New York where I grew up, but I would go visit my aunt in Michigan during the summers, and there was a station there that would show them about, like, maybe around noon or 1 o'clock, something like that. I knew it was always around lunchtime. It must have been before lunchtime, because I would watch The Twilight Zone and then I would sit down and have lunch with my aunt. And some, I don't know how I discovered it, but I do, the biggest memory that I have of The Twilight Zone, one of the first ones I saw was that Burgess Meredith one.
Yeah,
where he's the librarian, or no, he works at the bank and he loves books. And
he
his
survives
wife,
the nuclear war.
Yeah, exactly. And to me, especially being a child of sort of, I would guess, the second sort of nuclear arms race with Reagan, and you know, I don't know about you, but all that stuff really got into my head. All the, like, the Russians are going to nuke us, and there's going to be a nuclear war, and you know, the Soviets are the evil empire and all that stuff. That stuff really freaked me out. And I did believe as a little kid that there was going to be a nuclear war. I still have nightmares about it to this day, every once in a while. And so that Burgess Meredith thing, that being one of the first ones, I just remember just being freaked out and just, holy shit, you know, like, this is amazing. And then having seen subsequent episodes, I think the one with, like, Robert Redford, where he's Death, and the old lady is kind of, like, holed up and trying not to, and he pretends to be, I believe, a cop, and who gets shot, and she lets him in, and it turns out that he's actually Death, and she's trying to hide from Death. That just, stuff like that would just blow my mind. So when I was a kid, I was a big Twilight Zone head. Whenever I would I would just try and catch it as much as I could, because I just got sucked into that big time. And even as an adult, I mean, I have the first two seasons on Blu-ray, and they hold up. I mean,
yeah, they do hold up. The writing on those are just some of the most, it's some of the tightest, most incredibly memorable stuff that, you know, that I think that ever was on television. You know, obviously Rod Serling was, you know, just a machine, but you
Richard
know, the secret,
Matheson.
The secret weapon in their writing staff was a guy named Charles Beaumont.
Oh,
who
Richard
died,
Matheson too,
he died
as well.
Very young. I believe he died of Alzheimer's.
Really?
Actually, an advanced stage of Alzheimer's. But he wrote some of the most memorable stuff, and just an incredible, incredible writer.
Wow, really? Because my biggest thing was Richard Matheson, like I said.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, We Are Legend, and, you know, just a classic horror writer. And he wrote a lot of stuff for that, too. And, yeah, I'm looking up Charles Beaumont. That's interesting. I got to keep an eye out for him, because I did get the first two seasons, like I said, on Blu-ray for Christmas last year, and I made it through the first season, and I just started going through the second. And like I said, those things hold up. So I got, and I know that the name Richard Matheson, like, just jumps out at me whenever he's written in an episode. So
Beaumont was like Matheson in the sense that they were both established fantasy sci-fi writers. Beaumont did a lot of short stories, novellas, and there's a collection of his things called The Howling Man, if you can get a copy of that. It's one of the best collections of short stories that I've ever read. I've gone through, I think this is my second or third copy of the paperback.
Oh, wow. I'm going to have to check that out, because I'm a big fan of Matheson, and if you say, I mean, I probably sound like an ignoramus to a lot of people out there, but me, I have not read any Charles Beaumont, so I'm going to have to check that.
Beaumont was not as well known, because, you know, he did pass away very young, and you know, so it's, you know, everyone spoke highly of him. Ray Bradbury, Matheson, you know, I mean, he was just a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah, wow, it looks like he passed away in 67. Holy cow. Wow. Born 1929 and 1967. Yeah, yeah. Wow. That's great. Now, did you ever check out the Outer Limits? Were you ever big fan of that?
I did. And I liked that quite a bit. You know, one of the things that I liked about Outer Limits was that it sort of reminded me, like, in tone of some of the radio dramas that I used to listen to when I was like 5 or 6. You know, yeah. before we moved to Hawaii, we lived out in New Orleans, and my dad preached at a church that was really, really rural. Uh-huh. We would have to drive across this huge bridge called the Lake Pontchartrain Bridge, and you know, we would just be traveling on you know, Friday nights to get out to this place, and so we would just listen to these radio dramas that were broadcast on these AM stations out there. So we listened to things like Lights Out by Arch Obler, and you know, there were a lot of I heard a lot of the original Shadow radio dramas and things like that too. And Outer Limits felt like that. It just gave me that sort of, you know, creepy, like, wow, so much of this is like in my imagination feeling. I was a big Outer Limits fan. It didn't air with any kind of real frequency in Hawaii, though.
Yeah, it didn't really. I never really watched much of it growing up, and caught some of them. There used to be a video store in Los Feliz in LA called oh gosh, I can't remember. It's closed now, but it's they had a ton of like old TV and old movies that you couldn't find anywhere else. And I remember renting the Outer Limits videos and mm-hmm. thinking that they were really actually pretty decent, almost up there with the Twilight Zone.
Well,
in
yeah,
some ways.
I mean, you had that famous episode of the Demon with a Glass Hand that that Terminator was based on.
Yeah, and they were really solid, you know, solid sci-fi storytelling, but it just seems like it never reached the level of sort of, as far as in fandom, as far as like the Twilight Zone did. And I just never knew why that was. You know, why did mm-hmm. the Outer Limits never achieve that? But I've never, and it looks like, I'm looking at it now, it looks like on Amazon they have the complete series. I guess it lasted for 3 seasons, mm-hmm. and it looks like it's a pretty good deal. It's like $30.
Well, you know, one of the things,
pick that up.
I know one of the reasons it probably didn't catch on as big was because The Twilight Zone had Rod Serling, you know, and who was, you know, in many ways just sort of a beloved figure at the time. You know, those were the days of the, you know, the television hosts, you know, who sort of invited you invited them into your home, and they were these congenial men who would introduce the stories and wrap them up at the end. You know, Alfred Hitchcock was one of those guys. Walt Disney even did that with his with the Disney things. You know, they don't really have that. They had a, you know, each series sort of had a personality who was the, you know, the crypt keeper, if you will. You know, in a way, you've got Tales from the Crypt sort of has that. You've the crypt keeper is sort of like a demented version of Rod Serling. Outer Limits didn't have that, so you know, I think that may have been one of the reasons that at the time it just didn't have the popularity.
Yeah, and those went a long way in the beginning of the Twilight Zone, where he would sit and talk to the viewer. And I remember being a little kid, like feeling like he was talking to me, actually mm-hmm. feeling that I was being introduced into something. And again, Outer Limits not really being played so much, or at least I never caught it on the East Coast, you know, in New York and New Jersey. So, but when I did catch them, yeah, again, I guess they just didn't have Rod Serling. They didn't have the big gun that was Rod Serling, you know, at their masthead to help them out. But mm-hmm. still, I was just trying to look and see if they ran against each other as far as like when they were on, but I can't really locate that information right now.
What other horror things do you remember like after, you know, maybe sort of post Twilight Zone?
Well, post Twilight Zone, I just remember Tales from the Dark Side was on in mm-hmm. in Jersey a lot, and that was a syndicated show that was very much like a sort of capitalizing or wanting to build upon the old EC horror, it seemed like. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, did you ever get Tales from the Dark Side out there?
No, did not.
Yeah, and that was very, seemed like it was syndicated. It wasn't on a network. And I remember they had a really kind of creepy intro, and the music was like, you know, and they would have sort of the opening sequence was somebody maybe walking through the POV was you walking through these woods, and then it would flip to like a negative, you know, like almost like a negative view of the woods, and it would be Tales from the Dark Side. And it was an anthology series, much like again, like the EC horror comics, like Tales from the Crypt and stuff like that. And I remember that being a kid even then, sort of like a teenager when those debuted, and not really being scared by them, but kind of enjoying them in their own way, because obviously they were on TV, and they weren't on late at night. I think maybe like 7 p.m. if I'm remembering correctly. And I do remember liking the show and trying to catch it whenever it was on. But I don't have any big, huge, sort of powerful memories as much as I did as of the Twilight Zone growing up. But I do remember, and I've spoken to other people who grew up around the same generation as me, and a lot of people seem to remember Tales from the Dark Side, and it sort of being sort of a staple of their growing up. And I did catch some of them as an adult on cable once, and remember being spectacularly dismayed as to how bad they were.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just how really just not great production value they had going on, and not enjoying it as much. So maybe for younger viewers out there, I mean, I don't know. I don't even think they're on video anymore. I should look, but I do remember kind of being just like, oh, this was not good. Yeah, oh, it's one of the first things that pops up in my search. Tales from the Dark Side. Anthology horror series that ran from 1983 to 1988. Yep, that would probably, this is it. Yep, and I don't know how many series episodes. Looks like four seasons. So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say it was anything particularly mind-bending or mind-blowing, but solid stuff, you know, especially if you're a fan of the genre. And if you can find them, looks like some of them have been released on DVD. Yeah, first, second, third, the complete series you can get on DVD. So maybe I'll have to see if that shows up on Netflix for me, and if I can find maybe better episodes that I saw on cable. What about you? Is there anything in your teenage years past the Twilight Zone, past you know, the Outer Limits, that anything that you really...
I remember when they tried to sort of do those like pseudo anthology or like recurring things, like the Friday the 13th TV series, Freddy's Nightmares. You know, there was sort of an attempt at, you know, sort of restarting the horror TV show.
But,
you know, those were fairly mediocre. I liked the hook on the Friday the 13th show, which is pretty much similar to the Warehouse 13 show that's running on Sci-Fi right now.
You're right.
Where there are these like sort of magical or cursed artifacts that, you know, people at an antique store are trying to track down to keep them from causing harm in the world. It was a nice hook. It was really hit or miss as far as the scripts went, but yeah, I remember those. Those were. Those were always kind of fun to catch.
Yeah, I remember the Freddy series, and that was an anthology series as well, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was called. Freddy's Nightmares, is that? Yeah.
That's,
I think,
right.
Probably something close to that. And yeah, Freddy's Nightmares. And I do remember the Friday the 13th TV show growing up, and I remember catching the first episode and sort of being like, what the hell is this? There's no guy in a hockey mask. Just like being, you know, sort of indignant and just, you know, being really ticked off. And to be honest, between you and me, not really liking that show so much, but definitely only watching it because of the redhead that was on the show, thinking that she was attractive, and maybe every once in a while there would be a story that kind of got me into it, but for the most part, I remember the Friday the 13th show just boring me to tears. Just really, really not into it. But I guess there are people that really like that show, though. And like you said, that Warehouse 13 show does really lift a lot from the basic concept of the Friday the 13th show. So it must have had fans because that show was on for a little while, right?
Mm-hmm. It was, yeah. I believe, at least a couple of seasons.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. But that was another syndicated show, correct?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, it was not on any network. But it's interesting, now that you mention that show, do you remember Werewolf? That was on one of the Fox.
I do remember that. I remember that because was it Rick Baker who they had gotten to do the werewolf effects?
I don't know. I'm going to look it up right now.
I remember that the effects were quite good for television at the time. They weren't as good as the movie ones were, you know, because you had those fantastic, you had those fantastic movies at that time, like American Werewolf in London and, The Howling and things like that, you know. But it was the first time that I thought they really sort of tried to get the level of, you know, movie making creature on television. They weren't always very successful with it.
Yeah, I remember it being, it looks like it only ran one season. But it's weird that it would only run one season and still make that much of an impact. I guess it was because it was one of Fox TV's, you know, the Fox Network's very first shows,
right?
And it was they were only half hour episodes. It looks like it had a 2-hour pilot and 28 half hour episodes, and it was canceled in 1988, and it only ran one season. I just remember them being bad. Do you remember them mm-hmm. being any good? I thought they were.
I remember it being sort of like the Incredible Hulk.
Yes,
you know, like I remember, you know, I get literally to the like almost the same ending there, you know, where he like turns up his collar and he's hitchhiking to a new place at the end of every episode.
Yeah, the fugitive, basically. Exactly. The template of the fugitive. Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting that you mentioned the Incredible Hulk, because I was just thinking, as far as things that scared me, I mean, if we're going to talk about, I mean, we're kind of just talking about sci-fi, horror, whatever, but shows that scared the hell out of me, the Incredible Hulk scared the living pants off of me when I was a little kid. I was terrified of it. I would watch it and I loved it, but when he hulked out, that scared the hell out of me. I was terrified of Lou Ferrigno as a child. I don't know. You were a little older than me, so maybe it didn't, but...
No, it didn't bother me, but it was pretty thrilling. I mean, I remember, you know, this, you know, shirt ripping and the eyes glowing and everything like that, you know. That sound effect when he first... You know,
yeah, and the... yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that, you know, it was definitely... And I remember the, you know, when they aired the pilot, it was the pilot was... You know, to a degree, I think a lot scarier than the show
absolutely
ever dared to be.
Yeah, I mean, the pilot holds up. I have the whole series on DVD, and I remember watching the pilot and thinking, I mean, there's some stuff in the very beginning that's kind of clunky, but as far as the story is concerned, that's a solid pilot and very much directed. I remember thinking they directed this like a horror movie. This is solid sort of like horror storytelling, and being very impressed with it still. Obviously, most episodes of the Incredible Hulk show don't always match up to the quality of the pilot, but that's with a lot of shows. And you know, I just think as far as things scaring me as growing up, the Incredible Hulk scared the crap out of me as a little kid. But I was a really sensitive kid. That's why there's a big gap sort of between the Twilight Zone and almost anything else, because I remember the next series that really just kind of got to me or freaked me out, didn't necessarily scare me, but I think it might have been one of the things that actually kind of dragged me back into horror as, you know, a young adult, was the Twilight Zone, the X-Files.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how much of an X-Files fan you were, but I remember sort of at the time when the X-Files first aired, I was waiting tables. I was younger, probably early early 20s, coming home and maybe catching a rerun late at night or having the night off and sitting at home and just having all the lights off, being in my crappy little single apartment and turning this on, not really knowing what it was, but it was the Leech Man episode. Did you ever see that episode of the X-Files? And I remember it just freaked me out sitting in the dark and thinking, this show is amazing. And then from then on in, I was sucked in. I mean, were you a big X-Files fan too? Or
I did like the X-Files quite a bit. What was nice about it was a Friday night. And I wasn't ever really the kind of person who went out and, you know, did anything on a Friday night. I was usually working. I think when it premiered, I was doing sort of retail things or something like that, you know. So I, like Friday nights, I would just sort of stay home. And this was a really exciting show. You know, X-Files was one of those shows that sort of did like the big mythology. You had like a big mystery around everything, but then there were this sort of standalone episodes within that, and really great characters. I thought, you know, the monster design was for the most part always really good. You know, they for a long time they really knew what they were doing and made it as scary as possible. You know, one of the scariest episodes of TV I think I've ever seen was the one about the inbred family.
Oh, God.
Like, that's just, I remember watching that show about halfway through thinking, how are they putting this on television?
Yep.
And by the end of it, I was just like, how did they do that? How did they get away with that? You know, like, this is the kind of thing that, you know, gets people fired and, but at the same time, it was also, you know, there was also a heart in that show, you know. It was, I mean, that central relationship between the, you know, the two leads was really, really touching, and they supported each other through a lot of things until they pissed all over it with the movies.
Yeah. Well, that's definitely, I mean, the first 5 years of X-Files are perfect, and like you said, it's a show that very much, it was great because it would build on its mythology, it would focus on them, it would have a couple episodes, it would start off with, you would have a couple episodes that were building on the mythology, and then they would sort of abandon the mythology for like two or three episodes, and you would get like straight out sort of like spooky kind of horror sci-fi episodes, and then they would go back to the mythology for a couple episodes and then keep building on it. And that's the thing that X-Files did perfectly, whereas something like, say, Lost kind of would drive me crazy because the X-Files would answer questions and then open doors to new questions with the questions that they had answered. You know what I mean? There was some genius piece of writing going on there, or, you know, whether it's like Chris Carter's genius or whoever was writing on the show, Chris Carter, the creator of the X-Files, because they would answer stuff and then it would open stuff up. Whereas something like Lost, the first like two or three seasons, they did not have that sort of discipline where they just kept opening up new questions and not giving us any answers, which would infuriate me, and I almost stopped watching Lost because of that. Whereas the X-Files, again, you know, you would have a couple of episodes mythology, couple of questions answered, but once you answered those questions, wait, there's more behind. It's almost like the wizard, here's, you know, opening, pulling the curtain in front of the Wizard of Oz and being like, this isn't real, but wait, there's all this other stuff going on that, you know, we're leaving you with, right? And that was the genius of the X-Files for me, you know, beyond the just creepiness of it and, you know, the brilliance of the writing, so.
Right. And then, of course, as X-Files was on its sort of, you know, downswing there.
Yeah.
We had Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which I think between that and Angel are two of the best TV series just ever.
Like, yeah, just hands
consistently
down.
Consistently entertaining, continually reinventing itself, you know, great character work, great writing, fantastic effects. I'm more partial to Angel.
Me too.
As a spinoff, but, you know, Buffy was a fantastic series.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things that I loved Buffy. I mean, I love Buffy. I love Angel. And but Angel really is one of those things that where season one was so absolutely horrible. I just remember thinking, what did, you know, what's his face, the star of Angel,
David Boreanaz.
Yeah, what did David Boreanaz do? He is screwed. They're gonna have to cancel Angel, and then what is he gonna do? You know, I remember sort of being somewhat concerned, like, what did this guy do? And then season two of Angel possibly being one of the best seasons on TV ever, I think, in my opinion, because they just they pulled it out. They just, it was going into a nosedive, and I don't know what happened between season one and season two, but Angel is one of those rare shows where it's like, they saved themselves, in my opinion. Yeah. They really could have just crashed and burned, and they didn't.
One of those shows, too, that actually just got better every season, and I think it was, I believe, the third season or fourth season. I don't remember what it was, but every single episode was just so suspenseful.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, they would your typical, you know, TV episode, you've got your beginning little part, and they sort of end that on a little cliffhanger, you know, to get you through the credits, and then, you know, then the first act comes in, and there's like another cliffhanger that's like 10 times better than the first one.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, well, how are they going to top that? And then they manage to do that with the next act, and then by the end of the episode, you're just like on the edge of your seat, and then you have to wait another week for it to, you know, for them to resolve it. And they always resolved it with something that, you know, didn't feel like they just sort of pulled it out of their ass either.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I just remember thinking that both of those shows I thought were very well thought out. Obviously, little hiccups along the way because whatever, actors in this and trouble and politics, mm-hmm. Hollywood stuff. But for the most part, I mean, for me, Buffy and Angel just remained solid the whole way through. I remember with Buffy when it was coming on TV, everyone sort of being, you know, what is this? You know, because the movie was, I don't know about you, but I did not like the movie, Buffy.
I liked the movie. I went to see it twice in the theater.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Oh, I remember being severely disappointed by the movie. And, just kind of having high expectations. I don't know why, because just I think that, you know, I mean, the people involved, I should have, the actress and actor, why would they raise my hopes, you know? But but then when the TV series premiered, thinking like, oh, that just doesn't seem good, and having caught an episode in the beginning of the season, again, the first season, pretty solid, building up to something, but the second season of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, probably one of the better ones out there where, you know, I mean, if I'm spoilers, you know, Giles's girlfriend or the Giles's love interest, right? Giles being one of the characters on Buffy gets killed. And I don't think I'd ever seen that really on a TV show. I mean, I'm sure it happened in soap operas or whatever, but where they had taken a character that they'd put so much time and effort to and just wiped her out, you know, that was just brilliant writing, in my opinion, you know.
And now it's become sort of commonplace, so much so that they refer to that as the Whedon, you know.
Really? That's brilliant. Yeah, I mean, Buffy and Angel, I mean, I don't know that I would consider them necessarily scary, but definitely having horror roots in, you know, the vampire mythology. And that's one of the things that I really liked about Buffy and Angel was that they would have an explanation for what happens to you after you became a vampire. You know, for so long, it was just like, well, you get bitten, you die, and then you're evil. And it's like, well, why? Like, why am I evil as a vampire? What happened, you know? And whereas Whedon kind of built his own sort of like sub-mythology within the vampire mythology, saying, you know, your soul is based, you're taken over by a demon and your soul is gone and you don't have a soul, and, you know, obviously that builds into Angel and all that other stuff. So yeah, I mean, definitely one of the bigger and better series that came right after The X-Files. You ever watch the Tales from the Crypt HBO TV show?
Yeah, I watched a few of those.
Yeah, I liked them too. I mean, I think that they kind of embraced more of a humor, like a dark humor sort of quality. Mm-hmm. But I remember them being sort of solid stories, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and, you know, really good, like, one of the nice attempts at reviving the anthology format as like a little mini movie each week.
Yeah.
You know, like this is a little horror movie. You know, now that's, you know, quite popular because you've got the you know, the Masters of Horror series.
Oh yeah.
And things like that. You know, it's I think that the legacy of Tales from the Crypt, you know, definitely lives on. And it was really a cool place for you to see some of your favorite horror directors from the movies, you know, on a more regular basis, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And it was, and I think a lot of the stories might have even been directly lifted from the comics, the EC
right,
comics
from the
themselves.
DC comics. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And oh, it looks executive producers, Richard Donner, Walter Hill, Joel mm-hmm. Silver, Robert Zemeckis. I mean, yeah, yeah. I remember that there were really big names kind of involved in this show, and thinking that it was really great because they were not really all that, they weren't held back much because they were on HBO. Like, they
right.
could do what they wanted as far as, like, gore and nudity and all that stuff was concerned, you know, where a lot of TV shows couldn't.
Right. And, you know, really, it's, so that was sort of the beginning of, you know, sort of the HBO as a television alternative, you know?
Yeah.
You know, now it's, you know, that's, it's the preferred format. You know, people want a show that's on HBO. You know?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that sort of traces back to Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah, sure. Definitely back to Tales from the Crypt. And
now, I want to go back even a little further. Twin Peaks, would you classify that as a sort of a horror show or not?
I never saw it. I've never seen it. The only
what?
Thing that I've never seen Twin Peaks. I know, and I know that Corey is watching it right now, and he couldn't join us. But yeah, I don't know. What do you think? You tell me, because I know it's on Netflix, and I know that Amy really liked it when she saw it, and I have seen was Fire Walk With Me in the theater, because I was just a David Lynch fan by the time that movie came out, and I remember being blown away by it but not knowing what the hell was going on. But you tell me, is it horror? What is it?
I don't know. I would sort of classify it as sort of a proto X-Files, like it's definitely got horror elements, you know. There are, you know, spirits, there are demons, there are, you know, things that are beyond this world, you know. But at the same time, it's also got a little bit of a soap opera element to it, sort of in a way it comes off of the like Dallas or Dynasty kind of a thing, you know, where you've got like the town and all of its politics and, you know, relationships that are under the surface. I think in a lot of ways it is a bit horror, but in a way sort of it may have been the dark shadows of its time.
Sure, sure.
But done with an incredible amount of skill and art.
Well, it only lasted like 2 seasons, right?
Right.
Yeah, because I think in the second season, it's weird how much I know about the show because I'm not even looking at the internet, but I remember that they sort of started messing, you know, with the network sort of started messing with David Lynch's vision a little bit, right? And
right.
That's when David Lynch was just like, forget it, after the second season.
Well,
Am I correct about that?
He never wanted to reveal the identity of the murderer as early as they did. He wanted to hold on to that mystery a while longer, and you know, the network wanted it solved.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So you know, that's sort of where the, I think, the problems began to occur. And it, you know, it's not a perfect show, but you know, it's the level of skill that was brought to it is just amazing. You know, I think it's one of the first TV shows that I remember just looking like a movie, you know, like
huh.
The actual, you know, like care brought to the cinematography and to the, you know, the composition. It was really sort of a groundbreaking show in terms of the way things look. I think that we wouldn't have a lot of our, you know, good-looking television if it weren't for Twin Peaks.
Wow. Yeah, I definitely have got to check this show out. I don't know when I'm going to have the time to. Maybe that's part of the reason why I'm sort of have not, you know, been able to catch up on it, because I think for a long time it wasn't even on DVD, right? And but now it's on Netflix, so.
Yeah, and they did put it out on DVD. They call it the definitive gold box set, I think is what it is. And they have the most fantastic quote from David Lynch on the back of it, which is something to the effect of, "I think that this is a great definitive gold box set."
That's awesome. I love David Lynch. I mean, not such a big fan of the music thing that he did recently, but yeah, no, David Lynch, as far as
come
like
on, it's crazy clown time.
Oh man. Yeah, no, I don't know. But what are some current things that I mean, we've gone through some of the things, and I'm sure that there's many more out there that we've ignored, but currently, is there anything sort of that you would classify as horror that you're kind of watching right now?
Let's see. Besides Walking Dead, I would have to say that there's nothing.
Oh, what am I talking about? I almost American Horror Story.
You know, I haven't seen that.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So let's talk about American Horror Story, because this show, okay, as far as I'm concerned, like, I like The Walking Dead, mm-hmm. but I love American Horror Story, okay? Now, I don't want to get carried away, because American Horror Story is the only show in recent memory that I have loved, been like, this is the real deal. Like, this is horror. They are getting into sex. They are getting into creepy, weird stuff during the whole thing. It's mm-hmm. building up. There's ghosts. There's freaky crap going on. I'm loving it. It's just great. And then it gets to the season finale, and they crap all over it. They just, aww. Oh my god, I can't even tell you how upset I was with the season finale, where I was just like, I don't know what they were trying to do. They built up this really great story, they had all this kinkiness built into it, and then it had to do with the fact that the series was, that the finale was airing around Christmas time. It had to, because it's a Christmas episode, and it airs on a, and it ends sort of on a high point. And I know that people might disagree with me, like fans of the show, but mm-hmm. really, they were building up the whole season to a tragic ending, and then at the very end, it just all falls apart.
It turned into a happy ending?
Oh my god, I can't even ruin it for you. I wish you had seen it. I wish somebody had seen it. But the basic plot of the story is that there is a professor who's having a hard time with his family because he cheated on his wife with a student. And so what they end up doing to try to repair their marriage, which this concept is a little ridiculous in and of itself. I mean, you have to sort of buy into it. But, okay, the dude cheats on his wife, gets caught by his wife while he's sleeping with the student, okay? Mm-hmm. And their big thing to try and repair the marriage is to uproot the family and move to Los Angeles. Okay. All right, okay, I'm going to let that go. That's fine. All right, it's TV. I'm going to go with it. And so they move into this house, and it turns out that the house that they moved into is haunted. Okay, that's all you need to know about the show. And you need to let the whole kind of ridiculous, because I don't know about you, but my wife walks in on me screwing a 20-year-old, and that's it. It's over. Like, there's no repairing that. But whatever. Okay.
That house would start to be haunted right then.
Yeah. The house that you were living in, you wouldn't need to uproot the, you know. So anyway, they move to Los Angeles. They're trying to build a new life. But the thing is okay, I get past the ridiculousness of the pilot episode, but it's so well made. Beyond that, like, it's so well done, and the characters are so well fleshed out, and the acting is so really solid, that and it just builds up to a level of creepiness and kinkiness, which is very much like what you said, you know, with the X-Files, where it's like, they're doing this on TV. Now, it's cable TV. It's not network TV. But, you know, still, it seems like on cable TV that there's, you know, basic cable, that there's still no limits. You know what I'm saying? Because they were crossing lines in this show, which I guess if from what I've heard about Twin Peaks, you know, it was very much like Twin Peaks. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But then they get to the end of it, and it's like they pulled the rug right out from under it. And I was just like, oh. I had not been that angry at a season finale as I was like the first season of Heroes. That's how mad I was. Wow. And you know how mad I was with the end of Heroes.
Dude, where I still have scars from end of the first season of Heroes.
Yeah, I just remember being like the end of the first season of Heroes. So, but here's the thing is that with Heroes season, I gave it another chance, right? And so now they're coming back, and I was like, look, the journey was so good of the first season that if you go into it knowing that the first season finale is going to crap on everything that came before it, but you can go with the ride and just enjoy the ride, then I highly recommend this show because I really loved it. Jessica Lange is in it. Come on. Mm-hmm. She's a brilliant actress, and she's playing it to the hilt. You know, she's really evil and weird and you know, two-faced and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But this is why I'm going to watch the next season, which, again, like Walking Dead, and that's so funny that we started the show, and I completely forgot, like, why I wanted to talk about horror on TV, because Walking Dead is premiering tonight as we record this, and American Horror Story, I think, premieres this week. So
now the second season has nothing to do with the first season, is that correct?
Yeah, apparently, and that's why I'm even more willing to jump on and watch season two, because it has nothing to do with the first season. I mean, the only thing that ties in is that I believe that it's the Jessica Lange character is involved, but I don't think that there are any other characters or things that tie in to the first season. I mean, I don't know. I have not seen it, but I'm willing to put my faith in those creators and go, okay, maybe they'll do a really good job with season two, because as we've stated earlier, I mean, I don't know about you, but I think, you know, Buffy, Angel, like season two for a TV show tends to be where they find their legs, you know what I mean, and really pull stuff out. Like Battlestar Galactica season one or season two, I guess, is probably some of the best TV that ever aired, in my opinion, you know. Mm-hmm. And so with this, I'm willing to give it a shot. You got to check out season one. I mean, it I think you'll like it. I just remember just being very, very impressed, you know, and thinking, wow, they're doing this on TV, and just getting really excited about the show. And then it just was crap. I don't know, but you got to check it out. Oh, I'm sorry. I got all excited about American Horror Story.
Well, that's something to look for.
Yeah, definitely. Is there anything else? Any other horror shows that you've...
Gosh, you know, not right now. I can't really think of any other, like, sort of scary shows on TV right now.
Yeah. Well,
you know.
But, yeah, I can't think of anything that's really... Isn't that interesting that there doesn't seem to be... I mean, there's a lot of sci-fi, like Falling Skies.
Oh, yeah. The sci-fi had a really big resurgence over the last couple of years.
Yeah. But, have you watched Revolution at all? I haven't watched it.
No, I haven't.
I guess we're going to wait.
I haven't spent a whole lot of time watching, you know, network stuff. But
yeah. What about Dexter? We forgot about Dexter.
Oh, yeah, you know, Dexter, I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily qualify that as a horror show. I mean, it's got some, you know, horrific elements, but, you know, it's sort of more of like a dark character study.
Yeah. But I think there's enough in there with the serial killer thing and him strapping people down and stalking them that I think it is a dark character study, but I also think, like you said, there's enough horrific horror elements, you know, gore and, you know, and just the serial killers that he's stalking sometimes are just horrifying enough to consider it horror, you know, and what has happened to him like two seasons ago, you know, with his family, I mean, that's horrifying enough. So I don't know. I guess I would put it in there. And I would recommend Dexter, definitely. I mean, you would too, right?
Yeah, it's a good show. Solid.
But as far as like beyond Walking Dead, beyond American Horror Story, yeah, it's interesting that Masters of Horror is not on anymore, I don't think. So
no, it's not, but I think they're still doing direct to video productions.
Oh, are they really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's something to check out. Yeah, we didn't really talk about Masters of Horror all that much, but I have not seen a lot of them, so I couldn't really speak to it. All right, well, I mean, we're nearing the hour point anyway, so we might as well wrap it up, but cool. I mean, if anyone out there has recommendations for horror TV shows, just check us out at Part-Time Fanboy and email us at ptf@parttimefanboy.com. And hopefully next week I'm crazy about Halloween, so I love doing podcasts focusing on Halloween. So hopefully next week we can do something about horror movies in general. What do you think, Paul?
That sounds like a good plan to me.
I want to do top 10 horror movie moments, but maybe we'll have to stick to top 5 if there's more of us. So.
Okay. That Big sounds time. Good. Top 5 or top 10 horror movie moments.
Cool, man. All right. Well, this has been Part-Time Fanboy, and you have a great week. Bye now.
Bye.